Always a lot of fun when we get to say hello to Vince Ferrara, who joins us for this hour of the program. His appearance brought to you by Waters Equipment. Vince, how are you?
I'm good, John Wilkerson. How are you?
Well, doing quite well. Always glad to have you along. And Vince will be with us for this next hour of the show, so you can join in the conversation. 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. And we continue to, well, first of all, what do you think in terms of the news of Tennessee kicking off football on a Thursday?
Yeah, it's an opportunity to be in the national spotlight. I think that's always welcomed. And I guess it's happened. Was it Bowling Green? Well, the Bowling Green was neutral site, but they did it against one opponent on a Thursday. I'm trying to remember who that was because we hadn't
Appy
really
State.
Appy State. That's right. And that was, you know, a big deal because, you know, it was kind of uncharted territory for, you know, at least for a long time for Tennessee football. So I'm fine with it. I think it'll be an opportunity to have everyone centrally look at you in this Tennessee program and, you know, shed some spotlight on Josh Heupel in his first game on the sidelines for Tennessee. I don't know what else might be happening that night. Sometimes for those first weeks, you end up having a fair amount of Thursday and Friday games, and it's sort of spread out a little bit that first week. So we'll see what the competition is, but I'm fine with it. It's different, and hopefully, you know, fans will like it too. Also, warm weather, so you get to be, you know, away from the sunshine and have it, the temperatures be a little bit more bearable, which is probably welcome that time of year.
And then you now, Jimmy, thinking back to when Tennessee played at Louisville on a Thursday way back when, Coach Dickey was not a fan of the Thursday game, simply for just the amount of disruption that it caused on campus.
That's correct.
And just
that's
in
one
terms
reason
of the day-to-day
done
schedule.
It on campus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we invite you to join us, 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. Vince, Tennessee has also picked up a little more help and depth on the defensive line. What do you think of the addition from Kansas in the portal?
Yeah, Terry's obviously has some ties to this Tennessee coaching staff. Mike Eckler was there on the Kansas staff when he was a freshman, and obviously Ronnie Garner, he recruited him as well before, so he has that built-in relationship. You know, I think he has a better chance to be a contributor long-term and a little bit more of an impact guy than Caleb Tremblay. But Tremblay is a 1 year grad transfer coming in. Terry is more of a body because this team is going to lose so much with this experienced group that they've got. So I think this is more of maybe not the answer or you game changer, but you're short on, you don't have a ton of bodies now, probably not what they'd want. And then you're going to lose a bunch of the bodies that you have. So this is a little bit of a protection moving forward. But, you know, it's not like he has set the world on fire there at Kansas. And I don't think there should be the expectations that you're going to get that here in Knoxville. Maybe he plays better. Maybe all these guys play better. We'll see. But I don't think it's the, you know, something that changes a record or anything like that in terms of what you expect from this team. He does make the seventh incoming transfer that's either already on campus or committed to Tennessee. And now with Sean Schamberger going into the officially back into the transfer portal where he was once and then came back off and left the team, and now he's back in the transfer portal. But Jimmy, my count is 23 scholarship players for Tennessee now in the transfer portal that were not kicked off the team. So it's not counting Bennett, it's not counting Gooden, those kind of guys. 23 outgoing and 7 incoming. Plus you have the 4 guys that were let out of their national letter of intent. You had other guys that, you know, were walk-ons or on the team. That's, you know, that's not a huge deal. And then D'Angelo Gibbs, who just left the team, but he hadn't played yet for Tennessee. It's just there's so much turnover. We talked about the turnover of the Tennessee basketball roster. This is a much different Tennessee football team. And still, it just adds to the uncertainty of what you're going to get. But Jimmy, what do you think about the 23 outgoing, 7 incoming in terms of that transfer market swap?
I think it's a lot. I mean, actually, I had them at more than 25, but I'm counting, I guess, the Kevon Bennett's and those that were dismissed. So,
right.
I think that it's very difficult to rebuild a program because that – look, some of these players could definitely help you, right? A lot of them could, like the Eric Grays of the world and those guys. And some of them could have provided you with some depth. So I think that hurts you. And I think that getting these – I like some of these 7 that are in and 5 more recently that came in. And I think that a couple of them may just be really good backups. I think Juwan Mitchell is going to be a starter from the get-go, and I kind of agree with what Rick Neuheisel told him. He thinks he'll lead the team in tackling right away.
Yeah.
I think Terry has a chance to be a nice player for him. I think Peyton could fix into the mix at receiver. I don't know that he's much better than what they have, but I think he can help them there. To me, it's a net negative. You've lost too many and not gained enough in that regard. There was something I wanted to ask you, though, which I thought was an interesting question that I saw somebody pose. Would you rather have Henry To'o To'o, or would you rather have the 5 most recent transfers that came in? Tremblay, Peyton, Mitchell, Milton, and Perry.
A 5-for-1 swap? Is that what?
Yeah, 5-for-1. Yeah. Yeah.
I might say just because of their lack of numbers and because so many others left, I might say the 5-to-1 because there's the potential of also, like, saying air quote potential of maybe fixing the quarterback position as well. I would probably go the 5 versus the 1. But I think individual players, I think Henry To'o To'o is the best of the group as we evaluate him now. But I think you're going to see him go to another level at Alabama with what the help he's got around him, the roster, the coaching, things like that, which, you know, were obviously things he lacked at Tennessee last year. But Jimmy, I might go with the volume of players and that possibility of getting quarterback improved. Mitchell might be, you know, he's not quite Henry T, but I think he's still pretty good there. And Mitchell's not going to solve everything at linebacker. I don't know if Henry T would solve everything at linebacker. I mean, he was here last year, and they still stunk. So maybe it would be different under this coaching staff. But I think I would side with the 5 they brought in versus Henry T. Which side did you go?
I agree with you because I think Mitchell's going to be a good player. Mm-hmm. And I also thought that – I didn't think Henry T. had that good of a year last year. I do think part of that was coaching. But he also did not show very well on those slant patterns, right? He didn't do a very good defending those. But I also think that could be part of coaching too. But I think Mitchell's going to be good enough – to where you're going to say, okay, Peyton has given us some spark at receiver. We got at least one of these defensive linemen you hope will come through. And if Milton can win the starting job, then it way tips its favor into the 5 versus 1.
Right.
So I would take the 5 just on what I think they will end up bringing to the table and the fact that you need as much depth on this team as you can garner.
You know, Jimmy, I read an interesting quote from Nick Saban. You guys may have talked about it, in that he said, look, if you're going to bring in guys from the transfer portal, they're going to be guys probably that you think are better than the guys you have at that position. I thought that was pretty honest and pretty telling. That's a lot of the expectation that we have. But for a coach to come out and say that, and what he was doing is he was alluding to the fact that, look, we're not just going to bring in anybody. So we're going to bring in guys that we think can really help us. And if we're going to do it, we think that player is better than what we have at that position. If that's the case, then it speaks a lot to the potential that maybe this coaching staff sees if you apply that philosophy of what the coaching staff sees Josh Heupel and the staff in Joe Milton. that why are you going to do it if you don't think he can be better than your other guys? So, you know, for Alabama to do it, they can, they have a pick of the litter, you know. They can pick the puppy they want.
You know? See, and that may be the difference. They can be more selective than Tennessee.
Right, right. That's true.
We invite you to join us as our guest, Vince Ferrara, for this hour. 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. Looking forward to some Tennessee baseball tonight as the Volunteers take on Tennessee Tech. We'll have the first pitch for you shortly after 6:30, and of course the pregame, which will come your way starting at 6:15. Why don't we go to the phones and check in with Sandra, who joins us. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Sandra.
Hello, gentlemen. I just had something that's kind of stuck with me. I was listening to Brian and Eric yesterday talking about the Tennessee football team, and I'm going to paraphrase Eric here, but what he said was that what if he were Josh Heupel, what would keep him up at night is that they're really not a position group that it excels at right now on this roster. So I'm just wondering, I'm certainly not a negative person, but it seems like they have an awful steep hill to climb to get this program turned around. And I'd just like to hear your comments on that. You guys have a great afternoon, and thanks for taking my call.
Sandra, we sure do appreciate it. Vince, would you agree?
I would. I don't think there is anything in terms of a position group or something that they do that you can hang your hat on when it comes to the players and the roster. I think the one thing you can hang your hat on is Josh Heupel's history of being able to produce offenses. And that's, I think, where at least the coaching staff can find a little bit more comfort that, look, we our way seems to work. We've done it in different ways with different people. Yes, this isn't an ideal roster. We don't have all the talent we're gonna want. It's probably not gonna look, I'm sure it's not gonna look very pretty at times as well. But I think they feel like they can maximize the players that they have, and that the system maybe will be able to buy them some production and some success, especially offensively, until they get it the way they want it. So that would be one thing that might at least help them sleep a little bit more. If you're talking about losing sleep, for sure, because of the roster isn't ideal and isn't deep. And they've had a lot of turnovers we talked about, but I think that's where they might feel a little bit better putting their head on the pillow, because they feel good about their system, especially offensively. Jimmy, what do you think?
I would agree with you. I think the position that might have the most potential to step forward would be receiver. Still some unproven guys, but I do think they've got some pretty good talent there. And, Vince, I was picking my Lindy's All-SEC team, and it goes three deep. How many would you put on there? I mean, I put three on there. I had an offensive lineman, I had a return guy, all-purpose guy, and I had a punter. That was it. I couldn't justify anybody else. Maybe you can find somebody else I should have put on there. That's all I had.
You're looking at potential and, you know, getting more out of these players this year under this coaching staff, and I know that's what you're doing anyway, but there isn't anyone that you can fall back on and say, look at everything this guy has done in his career, so yeah, that's the call. I think potentially Alante Taylor, you know, he's been around a lot, he's more of a leadership role. He has athletic ability. I think if he was to put together a really nice year, that he could get a look in the NFL draft, because he does have, you know, pretty good size and experience, and that should be a motivating factor for him. But if they don't get any pressure on the quarterback and they don't have a good enough corner on the other side, and there's breakdowns because of the new system and just not having the ideal speed and things like that on defense with all the issues they could have, that may not reflect in him. I think, you know, who elevates out of the receiver position other than Velus Jones? I think maybe his biggest opportunity, more so than offense, might be in special teams. You know, potentially a Jalin Hyatt, if they can get him into some run after catch type of opportunities. I think he does have that, as good as probably anybody on in that receiver group, but he didn't participate a whole lot in the spring. It's slim pickings, Jimmy, after that, to be honest with you, unless a Juwan Mitchell, you know, racks up enough tackles to where, you know, that's a position where he's, you know, third in the league in tackles or something, and you could make a case for him. But it's tough to find him, which is kind of part of the problem.
Yeah.
Let's go next to Alan, who joins us. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Alan.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Alan. I got two things. One quick one. What's your all's prediction of attendance, if you had to predict right now, for the Bowling Green game?
74,500.
The first number that came to mind was actually less than that, and that's probably about 65.
Is that because it's Thursday, or just because it's a wait and see among the fan base?
A little bit of both. I think Saturday is more ideal for people traveling in from out of town, a few hours away, in-state, things like that. So I think that does take away from it. It's a trade-off for being on national TV. But I think there's still going to be some, for fans in a lot of ways, but I think there's still going to be a little bit of a, hey, let me wait and see, you know, before we go back to a big venue, and then we're sardined as close to other human beings as any stadium that you'll find. I mean, the way if it's a packed house, you are crammed into Neyland Stadium. So I think from a comfort and caution standpoint, it's going to take more to get them back. And I think there's a little bit of a wait and see on this coaching staff as well. So all those things, I think, would attribute to that.
Both of your projections based on that it could be a full house, that there are no COVID restrictions in terms of percentage of fans? I mean, are you saying that all tickets would be available?
Yeah.
I think that it would be a higher number. I think it would be upwards of 90, just simply for the fact that this would be an opportunity to do it.
Right.
Even though it is a Thursday night, and I do think that there's a fair point to look at it being a school night and all kinds of other things, I just think that the first football game where you have a chance to go and there isn't any lack of availability of tickets and seating, I would go 90.
And let's see where we're at that point, right? Just from a society standpoint or even locally, is there a little bit more of a proven track record that people are feeling good about getting back to normal at that point? And maybe that'll change. And then let's be honest, the closer we get to the season, this is kind of to your point, John, the more people get excited about the possibility of Tennessee having a good season. The record projections for the fan base start to creep up. So maybe that could work into a bigger number.
The other element that is no way to predict is whether or not some folks that didn't go to games last year got used to it and thought, hey, this isn't bad to sit at home on my big screen TV and watch Tennessee and other games, and they just kind of got used to that. And I realize it's a Thursday, but I just wonder how many of them would look at it that way. I don't know.
So, guys, I am always going to be positive and go about 90 with John, but let's max it at 90.
Okay.
UT ought to donate 15,000 to 20,000 tickets right now to Knox County to people who go in and get vaccinated. We're hitting the wall. We're slowing down. I think Tennessee used 10% of its allotment last week.
Really?
That would be I predicted 6 weeks ago we wouldn't get to 50% or we'd peter out. We may not make it there. But we need to get to at least 50. But anyway, I think they will sit empty. So why not do it? And if 1,000 people get a vaccine that wouldn't have otherwise, you know, hell, pretty good, you know, for the greater good. Do I have any time left for my other question?
Go ahead. Quickly.
Well, I don't know if I can do it quick. I'll try. So if you think about phases of college football, you had leather helmets, then we went to face masks, then we went from face mask and single wing to a quarterback, then we went from the age of the quarterback to, I call it the ESPN age, where games were on TV and you saw your team on TV a bunch instead of the radio, and then we went to BCS, then we went to national championship. I think each one of those phases we've gotten better and more exciting. But now we're entering, I'm going to call it the free agent phase. You know, the portal and all of that, name, image, and likeness, which I'm not against either one of those two things. But I feel like this may not be an improvement. What are your thoughts? Look, if we look back 10 years from now.
We'll go food for thought. We'll get a break and be back and pick up with that question. Alan, we always appreciate it. Thank you so much. Vince, as we watch the Tennessee baseball team go through its batting practice, it's Tennessee Tech tonight, and then top-ranked Arkansas arrives for a series that'll be played out with a 6:30 first pitch on Friday, noon Saturday, and then 1 o'clock on Sunday. It was just a month ago. It was number 2 versus number 3. Now it's number 4 versus number 1. Is this series bigger than Tennessee Vanderbilt, the same, or is there anything that puts this one just a step below Vols and Commodores in your mind?
It's a great question, John. I think that, well, first of all, there's no doubt that it is the marquee series in college baseball. I mean, you look at the schedule, the next best is probably Vanderbilt at Ole Miss, but the rankings don't measure up. This is the only top five matchup. I think because it's later, I would say it's bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony Vitello would tell you that too. The next series is the biggest one. But they've continued to have success since then, and it heightened the stakes. So I do think it is bigger. The opportunity is going to be even greater to make a national statement, because now you're going 100% capacity. And so you have a greater chance for home field advantage. So if you have success against the number one team, which you did not prior to, it will send even more shockwaves and ripples across the country. I think Tennessee is getting a fair amount of national attention, and rightfully so. But I think this could take it to a whole new level. And also, from your question, bigger can mean a whole lot of things. And I'm looking at it as even more than just on the field, John. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at it for Danny White to witness what kind of atmosphere can be developed here and really get the message. He probably already has the message and knows, but if he sees an overload crowd here and what this can be without yet having the facilities and the upgrades that this program needs, I think that can have a long-term effect on this program. So those are the reasons why I would say bigger.
You were tweeting out throughout the weekend, and rightly so, the road to Hoover in terms of the top four spots. Each division champ automatically goes to Wednesday in the double elimination bracket. The next two are based on overall record in the Southeastern Conference, so you could have three from one division as opposed to guaranteed two from each side. So all of a sudden you go from it being four teams sharing the top spot. Mississippi State loses in walk-off fashion at South Carolina as the Gamecocks get one of their three against the Bulldogs, and Alabama and Vanderbilt don't get to play their finale after the Commodores won the first two. Pretty interesting how it went from a quartet down to a duet in a hurry.
And the duet that's dancing this weekend.
That's right.
And Vanderbilt has taken some criticism, John, over not trying to move up their series and play a doubleheader on Saturday with the possibility of rain. And I guess they didn't want to and played it out that way. Maybe they didn't feel good about their pitching staff. They didn't have 100% that weekend. But, man, you would think Vanderbilt would be like, oh, we can beat Alabama. This is one we're going to want in our back pocket, and not have a game against a team we're supposed to be a deciding factor on whether we win the East or the league or where we're ranked in the SEC. So a little calculated risk there for Vanderbilt, and it played out. They lost that game, and it's a difference maker now. We'll see how it plays out. But I think that it is different, and it does separate these two. It played out perfectly for the hype of this weekend series. The key, though, is at the very minimum, you want to get that top four seed, as you know, John, because there's going to be some really good teams that have to play in that single elimination game on Tuesday, and you definitely want to avoid that.
Vince, how important is pitching depth during the NCAA tournament? NCAA, not SEC, but NCAA tournament, because that's more important, I think. And yeah. Do you think Tennessee has that depth?
It's important, and I do think Tennessee has it, and for a couple of reasons. One, especially once you lose, because if you have to start coming out of the loser's bracket, now you're having to play even more, and it really extends your pitching staff. And so I think that's a reason why you can work your way out of a loser's bracket game if you have some pitching depth. The second thing is Tennessee has very versatile arms. And that's more of a today's college baseball where guys can play different roles. You've seen it in Major League Baseball where, you know, guys that are the more traditional closers, now they're middle or long relief guys. And, you know, the starters aren't going the traditional length of time to start ball games, and sometimes they're brought back to close out a game. And I think college is even more of a mishmash of roles, and Tony Vitello believes in that. Frank Anderson believes in, hey, whatever you got to do, these are young guys, they can adjust, and so it's not as specialized with the arms. And I think Tennessee is indicative of that kind of approach as anyone in college baseball. And they've got veteran arms, they've got versatile arms, they've got young arms, and they've got power arms as well. Not everyone is always at the top of their game, but if somebody isn't, they've got a number of options and ways they can go to, because this team I don't think they've put it together fully to their max, but they're good enough to where they shake off one bad outing, somebody else can come through and help you out. So those are the reasons why I do think that this team is pretty equipped without any weaknesses as well, any glaring weaknesses like some other teams have, that they can have postseason success.
I want to go back to something that Rick Neuheisel said in our interview with him last week. He talked about one of the quarterbacks maybe not being able to make all the throws. How important do you think it is in Josh Heupel's offense that his quarterback can make all the throws?
I think Josh Heupel and his staff will adjust to a quarterback that maybe can't do everything. I think you'll see them take shots down the field, Jimmy, but I don't know how much that they – and that some of that is decision-making and accuracy more so than arm strength and being able to diagnose when those opportunities are there to take your shot to where you don't have to – sling it down the field 60 yards, or you're not asking a quarterback to go from the boundary side to make a far hash or outside the numbers throw that, you know, the elite quarterbacks can do. I think this offense can function at a pretty good clip even if you don't have that. Obviously, the question would be, what are the limitations of not being able to make all the throws? What does that entail? And if it's just a matter of not elite arm strength, I do think that this coaching staff will adjust to what the quarterback can do if they can do the other things on a high enough level. If that's the deciding factor and everybody's about the same and all that, then yeah, it can hurt.
Vince's appearance brought to you by our good friends at Waters Equipment. And Vince, it'll be Thursday before you know it. What can we look forward to this week on In the Cage MMA Radio with you and Tim Lloyd?
Yeah, we're going to have a busy show. We're going to preview UFC's pay-per-view. They're doing their show in Houston in front of fans as they continue to move around the country a little bit more. Had the packed house in Jacksonville at the last pay-per-view, and now in Houston. So big card, and will be a fun main event with Charles Oliveira and Michael Chandler for the vacant strap, and then that Habib Nurmagomedov vacated. And then also we will talk to Greg Hopkins, who is the Valor Fighting Challenge welterweight champion, is defending his title in Chattanooga, pay-per-view, VFC 82. So we'll preview that card with Greg, and we'll name our winners and losers from last weekend in MMA and the UFC. So we'll be fun Thursday night, 8 to 9 here on the Sports Animal.
And then to promote what you have going on this weekend, you'll actually have a call on Saturday, right?
Yeah, and that's the show that Greg Hopkins will be on. So that'll be, if you want to get it on pay-per-view, VFCMMA.com. I do lead commentary for Valor Fighting Challenge, and we kind of branch out into different areas every once in a while. Not as much as we used to, but still do around the Southeast. So, yeah, you can check out that pay-per-view or get your tickets and go see it in person at Camp Jordan Arena in Chattanooga at FighterTicksWithAnX.com.
How long has it been since you last called about?
Well, last Friday.
Last Friday, okay.
Yeah, at the Cotton Eye Joe.
Okay, I wouldn't wear that.
Yeah.
All right, well, cool. And I know we always like to get on the road just a little bit. That should be fun.
Yeah. We used to go into Kentucky and Nashville all the time. I still think we're going to go to Nashville here later on in the summer. But, it is nice to branch out a little bit, and because Valor does cover the entire Southeast, not just a Knoxville organization, and keep sending fighters to the big show, and there'll be opportunities for guys on that card. 23 bouts on the card, so it's going to be a long afternoon and night, but it's always well matched, and it'll be a lot of fun.
If it doesn't work out for Tim Tebow at tight end with the Jaguars, do you think he should give MMA a shot?
No. No, he's got a moneymaker with a face, so you don't want to mess with that. Too pretty.
No, not one bit. What do you think in terms of, he hasn't made the team, but he has been signed. What do you think of when the season starts, he'll be 34 years old. What do you think about that being the age he makes his return or attempts to make his return to the NFL?
Well, going back to what you asked about, John and Jess, that's not too old for MMA. I mean, we've seen guys even older make their debuts in it. Now you got to start as an amateur. Tim Tebow would never start as an amateur. I mean, he's not going to go to like anything less than the NFL. I guess he had to do it in minor league baseball for the Mets, so maybe there is precedent into that. I'm not too big of a fan of it. I'm not a Tebow hater or anything. It seems like he is such a polarizing figure. People either love him or they hate him. I'm really not in either camp. I just wonder what it does to that team in saying, all right, so why is this guy here? Because the head coach coached him at Florida. Like, why is he here? Like, how is he going to make a difference to this football team? And now you're potentially dividing some in the locker room. Others will be, hey, I love what you stand for, loved you as a player, let's go. Let's see what you can do. I don't think it's the biggest deal in the world, maybe not to the level that is being discussed on ESPN on a 24-hour cycle right now, but I just don't know that he's going to be enough of an impact player to where you bring that circus in and it pays off for you. But if anyone can handle it as the number one pick and quarterback coming in that is not going to be phased by it, I think it's Trevor Lawrence with his maturity and everything he has handled that has been on his shoulders already. So I don't think it's going to impact him. But why take that chance as a brand-new coach in the NFL coming from the college game, and now some of your players may be like, what is this about? Like, mm-hmm. He's not going to win a job or be a difference maker. So why are we even bother giving him his, his tour, his Make-A-Wish tour or whatever, to be able to do this. I just don't see the payoff for Jacksonville.
Yeah, Jimmy, you have a thought?
Yeah, I disagree completely.
Okay, that's cool.
Well, he's not going to play quarterback, so it's not affecting Trevor Lawrence. Okay, he's at tight end. My other thought is this. If you can't beat out a 34-year-old that's never played tight end, that's your problem. And I also think he could be great in the clubhouse. He's going to work his rear end off. He's going to be a good influence. He's going to be a good supporter of those players. I don't think there's a guarantee he makes the team, but I also think he could be great for that locker room and be a great example. And I think if those players have a problem with Tebow, that's their fault, not his. So that's my take.
Got to throw this out here real quick.
Sure.
I completely and totally forgot to pick up Alan's question at the tail end.
Oh,
Vince, okay. Can you hang out for one more
sure,
segment?
Sure.
Okay, so what we will do is We've teased it for 30 minutes. We'll start hour number three of Sports Talk, and Vince and Jimmy and I will knock down the second half of Alan's question. So, Vince, we've got one more segment with Vince coming up. Sports Talk, hour number three begins next on 99.1, The Sports Animal. So I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams, and it's bonus time with Vince Ferrara because Alan asked a question at the bottom of the hour right before we went into a break, and he was talking about the different stages of football, and he had said that with each successive age or stage that he thought the game got better, and then he said he's not so sure if we'll be able to say the same with the impact of the transfer portal. So he was asking what we thought of the portal, its impact on the game, and whether or not we will look at this as the right move. As you kind of have won a lot of movement, if not flat-out free agency. So, Vince, what do you think in terms of the portal and impact on the game, and do you like it?
I'll try to keep it quick because I don't want to take up too much of your time here in this, air quote, bonus segment. Appreciate you guys keeping me over. But I think the transfer portal has not been executed great. I think there's the unintended consequences with – obviously, the free agency, we knew kids were going to end up getting recruited off of their existing campuses to try to transfer over. That's only going to increase as time goes on with the one-year transfer that will be allowed. And eventually, I think most of the conferences will take the inter-conference restrictions off as well. I think kids are trying to right wrongs that aren't wrong. And they're using it as a quick out to be able to get out of situations. You have a couple of players that were suspended at Tennessee that transferred out. Well, I mean, wow, that's quick. Did you have anything to do with that? So, I mean, each situation is going to be different, but you want kids to be able to fix their situations if they're not great, especially after coaching changes. I think that was one of the bigger reasons why the thought was that it would be good. Hey, coaches can leave. Why can't kids? And I agree with that. But now it's being used for much more than that. And it just has not played out, I think, in a great way. And it's only going to increase and get worse. But, Jimmy, that's not a surprise, right? We expected it. They expected the unintended consequences to play out, and we're certainly seeing it in terms of the transfer portal.
Yeah, and one of the things I don't like about it, I just think it encourages quitting. You get yeah. If there's competition, you quit. Coach gets on you in practice, you quit. I don't like that. I think there are a lot of cases where people at Tennessee and other schools, they stuck it out when there were tough times or they got homesick. Now they don't do that. They just leave. And so I'm not a big fan of that, and I do think there's some unintended consequences. I agree with you there. I also think the name, image, and likeness is going to be an absolute can of worms. I don't think there's any way in the world to police it. And so I think both of those moves will be to the detriment of college football. They will make college football, in my opinion, worse.
Yeah, John, there's dozens of questions with name, image, and likeness. A lot of them is, hey, what's going to happen if not all the states, and they probably won't, be on the same page in terms of allowing it? Mm-hmm. Then what if the states come in, like Georgia had talked about proposing, hey, you can do it, but then you have to give X amount of money back if you're going to do it. So then you get politics working in the favor. Does that work for or against the student athlete? And then what's the NCAA's answer? That the NCAA is going to try to get a hold of this, and they're going to try to put something in place before all these states start to either sign off on it or not. And the thing is there could potentially be, if all the smartest people were in a room making these decisions, they could probably figure out some answers to where it won't be 100% perfect, but at least it's not going to completely change the game. But now you're depending on the NCAA in their current setup to make those intelligent decisions, and that's where you lose any trust in how it's going to play out.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail a number of times right on the head, simply for the fact that you've got a lot of people that are in the decision-making process that either one haven't thought it all the way through, or you don't have the confidence in their ability to come away with what would be the best path to take. And I do think that the NCAA continues to move in the right direction, and that is more and more control, opportunities, and options for male and female student-athletes. Yep. And I think anything they continue to do to push them in that direction is fine, but I also agree with what Jimmy says. I do think that there's so much that if you are going to go with them being able to benefit greatly from it, I also think that you're going to have a lot of checks and balances in place just to make sure it doesn't go haywire and become exactly the ability to print cash for a number of top athletes and or stars at their respective programs. And I just think the oversight itself is going to be a headache, but I do think it could be doable. It's going to take so much paperwork that if you thought the compliance department was busy now, just wait till you kick this in. Because
well,
I do think
the NCAA doesn't want this in the first place.
Right.
So I just wonder what kind of resolution they're going to come to. Again, I just think it's going to be virtually impossible to police it. That's my thought.
I just think that you might have to fill out forms time and time again just to say we want these athletes to be at our place of business, or if you're going to have somebody do a commercial, then you have to fill out this form, and you have to produce copies of the payment that was indeed agreed upon ahead of time. I just think that there is going to be a massive amount of record keeping if you hope to keep it all somewhat, for lack of a better word, manageable. Because I do think it is going to be like trying to sip water out of a fire hose. But as far as the transfer portal itself, I do, again, appreciate the opportunity for folks to move around if things aren't working out, but I also hate the notion that you spend 3, 4, if not 5 years at a location, and then you decide, I just think I'm going to throw all that to the side and go ring chasing. Because you would think there would be a greater connection to the school and teammates that you've been with over that period of time before you just decide, you know what, I've got greener grass on the other side of the fence. And so I wish there would be a way that you could make it where you just have windows for your prospective sport, that you do get the one-time transfer, but it has to happen at this point in time after the academic year, or it has to happen at this point in time at the end of your season. I just think that is something that should be explored. And at the same time, Jimmy, as you mentioned yesterday when I brought it up, it would be restricting freedoms that are right now in place, but I do think that we could come up with protections that are there, not just options and freedoms for the student athletes themselves, but also for some programs who could find themselves, you go to bed on one day, wake up the next, and you've got an entire roster of 12 people to fill.
Yeah. And it bothers me probably more so in basketball, because your roster is smaller, and if 8 people want to transfer out, you're in a world of hurt.
So anyhow, sorry we didn't get to it right after I said we would get to it, but Alan, there's our thoughts on the question that you asked. Vince, if folks aren't making 99.1thesportsanimal.com a part of their daily routine, they should, but what would they find right now?
A ton of content on UT. There are so many podcast of all the shows. Not only do we podcast every interview that you hear on all of our shows, but every hour of all of our 4 weekly weekday shows and tremendous content there. There's videos, a video section with a playlist. You can go back and see so many press conferences. If you miss something from Josh Heupel during the spring, or one of the players, you want to go back, or Danny White, see what he said this time, you can find that in the video section on our website, 99.1 The Sports Animal. Blogs from me and Jimmy and a number of our staff members. I have my blog there with quotes from Charles Davis, where he told me for the blog what he thinks about the fit for each of the 3 rookie VFLs in the NFL now with their new teams, and Josh Palmer, Trey Smith, and Bryce Thompson. So his insight might break down on the competition at those positions. So that's just an example of so much of the Tennessee content on there, and we expand beyond that as well. So all of that on our website, 99.1thesportsanimal.com, and also any of our contests that we have on the station, promotions. In the What's Happening section, you can see and read about what the rules are and, you know, when we're going to be a live broadcast, things like that. So just fish around on that, on the website, in the menu tab at the top in there. There's probably so much more there than you've realized in the past, and hope you'll spend some time on it.
Sure do appreciate it. Vince, thank you so much for a little extra time, and we'll talk to you here in just a little bit back here at the ballpark.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Thanks, guys.
All right, thank you.
Vince.
That's Vince Ferrara joining us on 99.1 The Sports Animal.